Good afternoon, everyone. I call the Senate Health and Social Services Committee to order at 1:33 p.m. Tuesday, April 5th. We're meeting room 205 of the Capitol Building, the Budget Bits Room. Please remember to silence your cell phones as a courtesy. Committee members present today are Senator Reinbolt, Senator Costello, myself, Senator Wilson. We are expecting Senator Hughes and Senator Baggage is excused on their state business. We do have a quorum today. This afternoon, we only have one item of business. That is HB 62, Marriage Witness, which is sponsored by Representative Matt Klayman. We'd like to invite Rep. Klayman and his trusty staff to the table and come forth to put themselves on the record and start with the bill introduction. Our goal today is to hear from the bill sponsor, do a sectional analysis, take invited public testimony, and move the bill aside and consider possible other committee actions and recommendations for a later day. Representative Klayman, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the Senate Health and Social Services Committee. Thank you for hearing House Bill 62. At present, during the solemnization of marriage, couples must assent to the marriage in the presence of each other, the person solemnizing the marriage, and at least two additional witnesses. Afterward, all parties must sign the marriage certificates. House Bill 62 would eliminate the requirement for two additional witnesses at the marriage solemnization to help support Alaska's destination wedding industry while preserving the integrity of marriage. HB 62 adds a requirement that a person verify that the parties intend to marry each other. Thus, both the person solemnizing the marriage and the person verifying sign the marriage certificate and provide contact information. Finally, HB 62 repeals the statute that allows a Superior Court judge to grant permission to a person who has reached the age of 14 but is under the age of 18 to marry. It still allows 16 and 70-year-olds to marry so long as they have parental consent. Alaska is one of 20 states that require two wedding witnesses. 23 states in the District of Columbia do not require wedding witnesses. Wedding witnesses played a more critical role in past centuries when record keeping was not reliable. Witnesses could be contacted to verify that a wedding had taken place if records were damaged or missing. Today, however, the role of a wedding witness is ceremonial. In Alaska, while the person solemnizing the marriage must meet certain criteria, no form of written witness verification is required, just a signature and not even their printed name on the certificate. HB 62 would allow Alaska to compete with states like Hawaii and Florida, which require no wedding witnesses and lead the nation in destination weddings. Destination weddings are a significant and growing business in Alaska. As shown in the chart we distributed, non-resident weddings, where both parties are non-residents, already comprise approximately 10% of marriages in Alaska. The two-witness requirement makes Alaska a less attractive location for many who travel from farther away or who do not want the financial burden of a larger wedding. Couples who come to the state without their own witnesses are tasked with finding strangers to witness their wedding. The burden of supplying these witnesses often falls to those who work in Alaska's wedding industry, who ask friends and family to witness the weddings of their out-of-town clients. The two-witness requirement can also place an increased financial burden on the couple. For example, for remote location weddings, such as on top of a glacier or a mountaintop, the couple must pay extra aircraft seating costs to transport the witnesses to the wedding ceremony. At present, destination weddings bring in an estimated $1 million in revenue to Alaska in the form of approximately 500 destination weddings every year. This revenue figure doesn't even account for the fact that more than 90% of the out-of-state couples who come to Alaska to get married stay for days and weeks to explore our great state. The resulting benefit to Alaska's tourism industry is substantial. HB 62 will help Alaska's tourism industry by allowing Alaska to compete more directly with states like Hawaii and Florida. As a result of a House floor amendment, the legislation also makes an important change to Alaska law regarding child marriage. There is increased concern on a national level about the connection between child marriage and human trafficking and sex trafficking. Reducing or even eliminating child marriage in Alaska is an important step toward improving public safety. Research shows that the substantial majority of child marriages, 90% or more, involve a minor under the age of 18, an adult who may be several years older, sometimes as much as 20 years older. As you will hear from the invited testimony, a substantial majority of child marriages end in divorce, approximately 80%, compared to a divorce rate of approximately 60% or 50% for adult marriages. As we look to strengthen our economy and improve public safety, changing Alaska's child marriage law to reflect our community values is a much needed step forward for our state. I'll pass you off now to Brianna Cockbrook, who can walk you through the sectional analysis.
Good afternoon, members of the Senate Health and Social Services Committee. For the record, my name is Brianna Kakarik, and I'm staff to Representative Clayman. Section 1 amends subsection A of AS 2460-030 by amending the Legislative Ethics Act to allow a legislator to accept travel and hospitality for solemnizing a marriage. Section 2 amends AS 2505-301 by eliminating the requirement of two witnesses at marriage solemnization ceremony and adds a person who verifies the marriage by 1, communicating with both parties to confirm their intent to marry, and 2, signing the marriage certificate. The person verifying the marriage is not required to witness the ceremony. Section 3 amends AS 2505-321 by eliminating the requirement for two witnesses to sign the marriage certificate and adds a person who verifies the marriage by signing the marriage certificate. Section 4 amends AS 2505-321 by specifying that the person solemnizing the marriage and the person verifying the marriage must put their contact information on the certificate forms. Section 5 amends AS 2505-361 by deleting language to conform with changes made in Section 2 of the bill. Section 6 repeals subsections A3 and A5 of AS 2505-041 to conform with changes made in Section 2 of the bill. And finally, Section 6 repeals subsection B of AS 2505-171 to limit child marriage to individuals who are 16 or 17 years old and have parental consent as set forth in subsection A of AS 2505-171. Thank you.
All right, questions for the bill sponsor? Well, I guess I'll start here. Rep. Clinton, can you just basically just walk through what a plain person would do if two individuals were seeking to get married, what this bill would require and how this would just work out, and just from proposal on, you know, we're going to get married, and then just walk through past ceremony and how this bill will change that.
So because of legislation we passed a few years ago, elected officials can perform ceremonies, so I actually can give you firsthand experience from the fall. From a couple, young couple, he proposed, they made plans to get married, they went and got a marriage license, and then they contacted me and said, can I perform the ceremony? And so they had gotten the marriage license from Department of Health and Social Services Vital Statistics. At the ceremony itself, we performed through the whole ceremony, and then when that's over, they sign the certificate, I sign the certificate as the officiant, and we have, or the solemnizer of the marriage, and then there would be two witnesses, but they just sign it, and you wouldn't know who that was signing it unless you actually knew the people and somebody jotted it down, because that would not show up on the certificate. The difference now is that the second person that signed the certificate, in addition to the person solemnizing the marriage, would be the verifier. And because of the part in the wedding industry where there are actually a lot of these mountaintop marriages and hike into the beautiful stream or go to the waterfall and it's two people from out of state, the person that would verify the marriage could do that after the ceremony, but very soon thereafter. So they would actually have their name on the certificate. And the other change is that, well, you wouldn't be able to identify the people that were witnessing it in today's structure. Now both the verifier and the person solemnizing the marriage would both have their name, address, email address, telephone number, so you'd actually have contact information. So if somebody disputed that they had really gotten married, you could actually look on the certificate and say, oh, here are the two people that were there.
Okay. Thank you. And Section 2 talks about the verifiers. Is there any requirements for the verifier other than just filling out the information?
You have to be 18 years or older.
And do they have to... I guess they can just say, I verify the wedding, or I verify the intent of these individuals getting married, but not actually verify the wedding.
Exactly. And that's trying to accommodate the kind of the mountaintop weddings that actually can result in cost for people to fly up. They would need to have a conversation with the couple saying, did you actually intend to marry this person? Did you know what you were doing? And presumably they're going to say, yes, of course we did. And then they'd fill in that, and they could verify the marriage.
Okay. Any other additional questions for the bill sponsor before we go into invited testimony? Senator Reimbold?
I guess I've two questions. I'm trying to figure out, it looked like it was amended on March 9th, 2022, and then offered on 4/5/21. So, and I know you did a bill in the past. My bottom line question is, why is this issue so important to you? I mean, you've worked on this issue for years, and I'm just trying to cut through all the lingo and the technicalities of the bill and the, like, why is this, I mean, it just seems like a real serious passion of yours.
Well, you know, right, Senator Reinbold, we're both married, and it's one of the greatest things we ever do. It's one of the things that I know that some would say the state shouldn't be involved in marriage ceremonies, and I kind of agree with that. The problem is, of course, when divorce occurs, churches aren't very good at managing divorce. That's why the state is involved in divorce. And I just think it's one of the ways we can really support people in our community who want to get married, to make that one that's a celebration and that people really can have great memories of it and not remembering hassles. And in this particular bill, I got contacted by Joe Connolly, who's one of the invited testifiers, a wedding photographer who'd seen the bill that allowed public officials to perform ceremonies. And he called up and said, I got a problem. I'm like, what are you talking about? And he said, well, this is the problem. I get these people that want to fly in helicopters up to mountaintops, and they have to pay for two extra seats because of the witness requirement. Can't you help with this? And I'm like, this is how you keep Alaska ready and open for business. And it's funny because, of course, we all know people from Alaska. We know very few people that are from outside Alaska that come here to get married, but it turns out a lot of people do. And so I just heard from a small section of the business community that said this would really help us, and I thought this is another way to kind of support people who care about each other and want to get married.
Right. Follow-up, Senator? Right, Senator Casella.
Thank you, and thank you, Representative Klayman, for bringing this bill forward. Can you talk about on page 6, line 2, what those repeal sections are and the amendment that passed on the House floor?
So, yes. So amendment page, the repeal section is from AS 2505171, and subsection A is the provision that allows a person under the age of 18, 16 or 17 to marry with parental consent. And then subsection B is a procedure for the court to approve for a person under between 14 and 18 to marry with the court's approval. And the court approval provision currently comes up in two places. One, for people 14 and 15, even with parental consent, you have to have the court sign off. And then for 16 and 17-year-olds, they can seek court approval in a situation in which a parent might not be giving parental consent to marry. And it turns out that those provisions, the last time the courts have actually had anything occur within subsection B was in 2007 and 2008. There were, I think, 5 or 6 cases that came up seeking court authorization to marry, and I think 2 or 3 of those were approved and 2 or 3 of those were dismissed.
Yeah, thank you. I do have a question on the language. It says, get back to that section 2 in terms of the person verifying the marriage. Would that just be more just in line to say the person verifying the intent to marry instead of the person verifying? And why not have that at 2 people instead of just the 1 person, just to line up with the witnesses, just to have 2 people verify that their intent and not have to be present instead of just the 1?
It's an interesting discussion because this is what Representative Vance and I had a lot of discussion about, is the notion of the importance of, in some views, the 2 witnesses. And the reason that we went just with 1 verifier is that actually the solemnizer, the person, the officiant at the wedding, is actually a witness. So what we actually have today is 3 witness requirement. You have to have the person performing the ceremony plus 2 more witnesses. And if it's essential and Representative Vance is actually able to quote a section of scripture that she thought supported having 2 witnesses, we counted to 2 as a verifier and the person performing the ceremony.
Thank you. Senator Reimbold?
Yeah.
Okay. Senator Hughes.
So one of the things I would be concerned
about is there's the verifier has to sign something, and so they're being handed a piece of paper, and oh yeah, Joe and Jane got married, I'll sign it, but they are supposed to communicate and supposed to confirm that Joe wanted to marry Jane and Jane wanted to marry Joe. How are they going to know that they have to take that step before they sign that?
Senator Hughes, that's a really good question. I think of the practical realities that Joe and Betty are going to come to Senator Hughes and say, can you verify this? And they're going to say, we just got married, and you are verifying the fact that we intended to get married, and we did get married, and we want to be married. So I think when they come and say, please sign, I think in the normal course of discussion, somebody's not just going to be signing a piece of paper and putting their identification information down and not know the reason why they're putting that information down.
Follow up?
Yes, Senator Hughes?
I'm concerned that the couple might not communicate that to the person. They just, oh, we need you to verify this, that we got married. See, we did get married. We went up on the mountain. We got married. We need someone to verify it. Can you? Here's a photo. See, we got married. But are they actually the intent part? I'm just wondering, does the state right now have a actual form that is used as a proof of the marriage? Is it a standard, or are there just lots of different options for people? Because I'm wondering if there should be something on, if we do have a standard form, if it ought to say something about what signing the, being the verifying signature actually intends, that you had the conversation with the couple.
And in the present scenario right now, the form doesn't require any certification of what they do. I think that in general and in common knowledge, if I said these two people are getting married, you would know what we were talking about. And what happens today, I think, particularly with the destination weddings with the mountaintop arrangement, is they literally find two people that they may not know them at all, and they say, would you like a plane ride or a helicopter ride? And they say, sure. And then they watch a wedding ceremony, and they sign a piece of paper, and no one would know even how to find them. And I think the practical in that same scenario, like for the wedding that I performed that was up in Palmer at one of the cross-country ski areas, you know, there were 100 people there, and we all knew everybody, and you know, there was no ambiguity about what was going on. But I think in the destination wedding environment, what would most likely happen is you would go, and the couple would ride the helicopter up with the person solemnizing the marriage, and then they would come back down to the place where they booked the helicopter, and the person in the helicopter office would say, I do this periodically because people are going to get married, and they've done it before, and they know what's going on. And so I think you typically would have people that were involved in the ceremony but might not go to the place to watch. I just don't think people are under confusion about what they mean to do when they get married.
Follow up. So I didn't hear whether or not we have a standard form or whether lots are being used. And number two is most of us like to be law-abiding citizens. And if we're writing something in law and people don't know it, they could be not following the law and not realizing it. And if there is a standard form, would you be open to having some language that would, you know, somewhere in small print?
I would suggest, and actually in answer to the form question, the form question is a little interesting because there is a state form, and when you go and get a marriage license, you get back the state form, but the statute also allows churches and religious institutions to create their own form, and as long as their form has the minimum requirements that are there, then the marriage certificate can be issued by one of a church or a synagogue or another institution. And so I think if to the extent that we wanted to add anything, I would suggest that might be more that the vital statistics would have regulations making sure that they were confident that the forms covered all the bases. But I think that one may be creating more challenges than is necessary.
Senator?
Yeah. Well, we can think about it, because if churches can have their own form, they have to meet the minimum qualifications. And if one of the minimum qualifications is that the person providing the verifying signature has a chance to know what the law is to make sure they, you know, that they are following it, I think that would be a wise thing. I know in most cases, you know, it's familiar, you know, people would know, but I think when you're removing the witnesses, and because we have human trafficking, sex trafficking, that's not always with minors. Sometimes it's of people that are not minors. I think it is important to know if the intention and that someone's not being forced. So, I would be interested in having conversations offline to see if we could maybe work something out, because putting forward laws and having something in our statutes book that people don't know and they're inadvertently breaking law, I don't think that's good practice.
Senator Reinbold.
Okay, so have you seen the letter from Alaska Family Action, Representative Clement?
That may have not. That just got emailed, I think, just right before committee came out, so it's not uploaded to BASIS yet, but it will be.
Can I ask a few questions about it?
Yes, Senator Reinbold.
Okay, so just trying to get a few things on the record. It basically talks first at the end about Representative Johnson making a point that the laws are kind of inconsistent in Alaska because the law allows a 14-year-old minor to get contraceptives without parental's knowledge, much less an abortion, which I find outrageous, but anyway, without parental knowledge, even knowing about it, and I fought that issue for years, but 52 wouldn't allow the same. 14-year-old would be prohibited from getting married, and I'm not saying I support or against, I just, you know, in regards to that, but I basically said even if the parents consented, and they found out that the marriage was in the 14-year-old's best interest, it still would be prohibited. So they're basically just trying to say that the laws are kind of mixed up in regards to that. And if you jump back on a page before that, existing law AS 250501 states that an 18-year-old older may enter into marriage, and a person who is 16 and 17 can be married if parental consent has been granted. House Bill 62 does not change the consent age, but it changes the provision concerning the marriage of minors 14 or 15. Now, I can say that I would support if it is trying to prevent sex trafficking and things like that, of course. I mean, who would not want to support this? So I totally understand, and I think that potentially could be, first of all, let's see, that's obviously one of your main intents. Is that correct?
With respect to the child marriage provision, the child marriage provisions came in as a House floor amendment, and I fully support those efforts because I really think in the question of, I think Senator Hughes is correct that all trafficking is not limited to children. But if there are children being trafficked today, and the notion that we aren't going to do everything we can to try to protect them from being trafficked, I just think it's a very, very positive step to preventing trafficking.
Let's take a brief at ease here. We're back on the record. We are attempting to get copies of the mentioned letter by Senator Reinbold to committee members and to the bill sponsor, and that will be uploaded to BASIS at a later time and date. The representative does have important other floor business as their house, the other body, is working on the operating budget, and so I just wanted to give him a time to state any closing remarks and encourage committee members to work with the bill sponsor on forthcoming amendments or conversations that may need to continue as we continue to debate House Bill 62. Representative Clayman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just thank you very much for taking the time to hear the bill. I appreciate the questions. I think as all the committee members know, I'm always receptive to discuss and looking into details about potential amendments and kind of how it works in practice, and very receptive to all those discussions. And again, appreciate hearing the bill, and thank you for taking the time to hear the invited testimony as well.
Thank you. At this time, we're going to go ahead and start with the invited testimony list. We first have Joe Connolly online.
Hi, everybody. This is Joe here.
Yes, Joe. If you can place yourself on the record and please start your invited testimony.
Sure. I am Joe Connolly. I am the owner of Chugach Peak Photography out of Anchorage. And I'd like to begin by saying that I'm very pleased to see the amendment to increase the minimum age of those legally allowed to marry. I know a lot of you probably are more aware of this bill because of it, and likely the majority will be in favor of passing it on those grounds alone. I'm 100% in favor of this, but I'm going to allow the testimony of some of the victims of what is essentially child human trafficking to speak for themselves on that subject. Their voice is certainly more important than mine, and I hope that you all listen to their testimony with an open mind. So with that, thanks to Matt Klayman for explaining many of the details of the bill and why we think it's important that it passes. He did a great job of explaining our perspective, and I'll try to elaborate a little bit more next, but I'm also happy to answer any questions if you need clarification or more detail on anything. Now on to myself and my interest in the bill. The longstanding requirement to have two witnesses present at a marriage ceremony. I've been photographing weddings in Alaska since 2006, and in 2019, I approached Representative Klayman. This is right before the pandemic derailed the entire legislative process, and asked if we could get some help fixing this issue of the two witness requirement. And then the pandemic came and everything slowed down, and I think that might be part of the answer as to why Representative Klayman's been working on this for so long. So anyway, approximately 400 to 500 people come to our state every year to get married. Many of them are alone. That is, they don't bring family, they don't bring friends, and they don't know anybody here. Additionally, there's 4,000 to 4,500 weddings of local Alaskans each year, and many of these weddings are also without family or friends present, believe it or not. Requiring two witnesses to be present at a wedding is an unfair burden on those getting married in Alaska that are from outside of Alaska, or those locals preferring privacy from either family or strangers. I know myself, I had 70 people at my wedding. I know a lot of people probably had a lot of friends and family there, and it can be hard to understand why somebody would want to get away from their family and friends and get married. But there's a lot of people that come up that have second marriages. You know, they're in their 40s or 50s or 60s. They've already done the big wedding. They don't want their kids there. They don't want their family there, and they want to be just the two of them in a beautiful place like Alaska. So oftentimes marriage commissioners are tasked with finding witnesses to fulfill the state requirement, and this is an unfair burden to place on a marriage commissioner or a pastor, in my opinion. The witness or witnesses have to give up time during their day to attend the wedding of somebody that they don't know and they will likely never meet again, and they're simply doing this as a favor to their friend, the marriage commissioner. Many people choose Alaska as a destination wedding because of its remoteness, scenic beauty, independence, and grandeur. The state has granted virtually anyone who is over the age of 18 and of sound mind to perform a marriage ceremony with ease. One only needs to make a quick trip to the courts to pick up a one-day marriage commissioner license. However, here's where the state is going to start making things more difficult and burdensome. The state then proceeds to say, by the way, we will let virtually anybody marry you, anybody at all, as long as they're 18 years old and sound mind. But you then must also find two people to come with you, even if you don't know them. It can be complete strangers. You've never met them, but you have to have those people there. You want to go get married somewhere private and remote? Too bad. You got to bring two people with you. You want to climb a mountain 5,000 feet up? You better bring two people with you. And if you can't find two people, we're sorry, but you can't get married then. That's essentially what the state is saying. It sounds like an extreme example, but we do deal with this every single day in the summertime. It illustrates the point that the state is unfairly putting limitations on people's choices and freedom with an unnecessary legal requirement that has absolutely no purpose in this day and age. We've already got the person who's marrying them to recognize that they want to be married, the person that they've either hired or it's a friend or a family who has a vested interest in verifying that these people are getting married willingly. So one could raise the concern that witnesses serve as a backup in the case the marriage license is lost. This is very unlikely. If you were to call the Bureau of Vital Records and ask them how many marriage licenses they lost last year or the year before, I bet you they would tell you not very many, if any at all. But let's say that just by chance the license is lost by the state, for argument's sake. As mentioned previously, there's no vetting done of these witnesses. There's no requirements outlined of them. But there are specific requirements laid out for the marriage commissioner, the person performing the ceremony. And that person can verify that these folks were married, in fact. And if we did have a person signing as a verifier who wasn't physically present during the ceremony, but could talk to the people, then you'd have a second backup, if you will. And I'm in favor of that as well. Just please don't make it so that we have to bring two people out to these remote places. It just makes it really difficult for the folks. I'll leave it at that. But if anybody has any questions or needs follow up or more detail, I'm happy to answer anybody's questions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Connolly. Any questions for Mr. Connolly? Seeing none, thank you for providing your invited testimony. Next in the room here in Juneau, we'll have Don Tyree. I'd like to come and place yourself on the record and provide your testimony. Okay. If you would like someone else to come sit with you, you can do that as well.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Madam Vice Chair, distinguished members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to speak on House Bill 62. My name is Dawn Tyree, and I'm a survivor of child marriage. I was forced to marry my abuser after 2 years of sexual assault when I became pregnant. We fled the state immediately, and I was removed from school, from my family, from my network, and put into isolation. Okay. I was expecting my second child at 14 years old. When my daughter was born, I no longer wanted him changing her diapers. I was scared for both my son and my daughter, and of course, my well-being. And by the age of 16, I decided to plead marriage. Because I was a minor, even though I was emancipated, I could not go to a woman's shelter. I could not rent a hotel room. And I could not find anyone to support us, provide childcare, or help me get on my feet. And because well-meaning parents consent to these marriages, when the girl tries to seek safety, they disown her. And she becomes a liability to the community. We live below the poverty level for over a decade, often without electricity or even toilet paper. When I made the decision to really free us from the abuse, the court had been granting him visitation unsupervised. And I couldn't live with myself when the kids were with him. And I made a decision to risk everything, to risk going to jail, to risk losing my children forever. And we fled to Kodiak, Alaska for safety. And it was the first time I didn't have to look over my shoulder. And I'm asking the Alaska State Legislature to join in this national movement to end child marriage that is connected with human trafficking. I was trafficked. I was taken across state lines into another state and removed from all of my community. We are asking to have the legislation at 18 with no exceptions and be the seventh state in the United States to end child marriage. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Terry, for your testimony. Any questions? No? Senator Casella.
Thank you. And Don, I just want to thank you for coming to the legislature and providing your personal testimony. I've had an opportunity to meet with you in my office and also outside the office and get to know you somewhat. And certainly your testimony is quite powerful. And I'm sure that the committee will take into consideration when we look at this legislation. But I just want to say thank you. And I, you know, obviously what occurred to you is a tragedy, and it's not something any one of us here can undo. But I appreciate your leadership in trying to help other young girls who are in that same situation. And the comment that you made to me that I think will stick with me is that these young girls should be in the classrooms, not the bedrooms. And I agree with that. I think that education is really the future. It's such an opportunity that brings people out of so many different situations. And that alone, to have that you deprived of an education, is really quite powerful to hear. And again, I appreciate you making the trip here to talk to us face to face.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you. Senator Rembolt.
Also, thank you. Your testimony was very moving, and it makes me sick that that's happening in our state. It's absolutely sickening. And it's just sad to think that you had to risk everything in order to get help and to get a little bit of freedom. So it just makes me sad that there's not more people around to help. So thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate that. And when we question bills, I just want you to know we're just vetting them, you know, at the table. But if this bill does help stop what you went through, you know, of course, I want to support that. And I think if you have recommendations, if you wouldn't mind emailing them, because it's sometimes we're at the end stage and there's just so much going on right now, and being able to hear somebody that's actually lived through this, I personally would like to hear from you. I haven't had a chance to meet you before, and I haven't met with you. And so anyway, just want to say thank you for bravery, and you are making a difference. You're helping make the world a brighter place, and with that, you should really feel good about yourself. So thank you for coming.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you. And for anyone listening that may also want to submit a written testimony, they can do so by the HESS Committee's email address, which is shss@akleg.gov. Again, that is shss@akleg.gov, and that will be submitted into the record and given out to all committee members as well. And thank you again for your testimony today.
Thank you.
All right. Our next and last invited testifier is on Teams, and I'm going to hopefully not mispronounce your name too much. Is it Ms. Rima Masha? Nashashimi?
Very close, Mr. Chair. Honorable Chair David Wilson, Madam Vice Chair, and distinguished members of the committee, my name is Rima Nashashimi. I'm the founder and president of Global Health 365. I urge you to support HB 62 as amended and even go one step further to protect the children of Alaska, as we heard from Dawn, by raising the minimum age of marriage to 18, no exceptions. Global Health 365 is a 501c3 nonprofit. Our focus is on ending harmful practices against women and girls, such as child marriage, human trafficking, and other forms of gender-based violence locally and nationally. HB 62, as amended, is legislation that harms no one, costs nothing, and ends this specific form of child abuse, namely child marriage. Child marriage can be a cover-up for statutory rape tied to human trafficking or sexual exploitation, shield parents who are abusive, neglectful, or unfit from investigation, and or give parents away to avoid further responsibility for a child. Child marriage remains a serious problem in the U.S. Between 2000 and 2018, well over 300,000 minors were married, mostly girls married to adult men. In about 88% of these marriages, the marriage license became a get-out-of-jail-free card for a would-be rapist under state law that specifically allowed within marriage what would otherwise be considered statutory rape. According to the Alaska Vital Statistics 2020 annual report, 2,113 people between the ages of 15 to 19 year old were married between 2016 and 2020. Children lack the rights, knowledge, and resources of adults and are more vulnerable to coercion and exploitation. As a result, many child marriages are forced marriages and or cover-ups for other abuse and exploitation and crimes such as statutory rape and human trafficking. Young women and girls ages 16 to 19 post intimate partner violence victimization rates almost three times the national average, experience 37% higher rate of living in poverty, as we heard, are 50% more likely to drop out of high school and four times less likely to graduate from college. Minors are more likely to suffer abuse, both mental and physical, by their husbands. In fact, Elizabeth, a child marriage survivor we work with that Dawn knows, indicated that she still has nightmares and is in counseling. She's over 50 years old now. The American Medical Association has called for an end to child marriage, stating child marriage is associated with higher rates of sexually transmitted infections, early pregnancies, divorce, and intimate partner violence than women married at age 21, in addition to infant and maternal mortality. The Trafficking Victim Protection Act of 2008 defines severe forms of sex and labor trafficking as when a commercial sex act is induced by force, fraud, or coercion, or when the person induced to perform such an act has not attained 18 years of age. Even though forced sex within a forced marriage is not a commercial sex act, arguably, human trafficking can describe some forced marriage cases. Elements of forced labor may also present, particularly in cases of servile methods. Of the sex trafficking situation reported to the National Human Trafficking Hotline in 2019, the top two ways that sex trafficking victims were recruited into their situations were through intimate partners or family members. HB 62, as amended, harms no one, but saves our children from the type of child abuse and exploitation. I implore you to please vote in favor of HB 62 as amended and go one step further by raising the minimum age of marriage to 18, no exceptions. Holding firm on the minimum age of 18, no exceptions, has the effect of protecting those who are most vulnerable to being forced and coerced into marriage, namely children. You have within your power the ability to make Alaska a national leader in child protection. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Rima. Any questions for that about a testifier?
Excellent testimony through the chair. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And thank you for your work. I just can't imagine facing the monsters who are doing, you know, this. And so it takes a really strong woman, and you're a role model to others, and thanks for being there for these victims.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, I just want to say thank you again for all our invited testifiers and the testimony that they shared today for the committee. This time, we're going to go ahead and open public testimony. Is there anyone else here in the room in Juneau that would like to provide testimony? Seeing none, we'll go to the phone lines. And our first testifier is Freda Reese. Reese, if you can state your name for the record and provide a couple of 2 minutes for your testimony.
Hi, I am Freda Reese. I am the founder and executive director of Unchained At Last. I am a published expert on forced and child marriage in the United States. I'm a service provider who helps forced and child marriage survivors escape, and I myself am a forced marriage survivor. And I'm here to urge you to amend HB 62 to eliminate all marriage before 18, no exceptions. Marriage at 16 or 17 is just as dangerous as marriage at 14 or 15. Under the current law, parents can enter teens into marriage with just a signature on a form. There is no recourse under the law for a teen whose own parents are forcing them into marriage. And I need you to know that when a child is forced to marry, the perpetrators are almost always their own parents. We at Unchained At Last have worked with survivors who cried openly, begged for help, and there is nothing that they or the court can do once their parents sign the form. Now, it's not about maturity, it's about legal capacity. So even at 16 or 17, even the most mature minor can easily find themselves trapped in a marriage. They do not get the full rights of adulthood until 18. So before they turn 18, even a day before, they cannot easily leave home to escape from a forced marriage because they can be taken into protective custody. They cannot get into a domestic violence shelter. Shelters turn away unaccompanied minors. They cannot retain an attorney to help them figure this out because contracts with minors are voidable, and they're not even allowed to independently bring a legal action. And besides, at 16 or 17, for even the most mature minor, marriage is a human rights abuse. That's how the U.S. State Department categorizes it. It produces devastating lifelong repercussions for a girl's health, her education, her economic opportunities, even her physical safety. Also, once a minor is married, they are automatically emancipated under Alaska law, which unfortunately typically forces them to become financially dependent on their spouse because it typically eliminates their parents' financial obligation. And this can lead to teen homelessness because 70 to 80% of marriage before 18 ends in divorce. Besides, 99% of the minors who marry in Alaska are age 16 or 17. So of the 823 minors who married in Alaska between 2000 and 2020, 811 were age 16 or 17. So moving the marriage age from 14 to 16 is going to protect only 1% of the individuals you are trying to protect. By the way, Alaska also is the only state in the U.S. that has a military exception to the marriage age. And in fact, even around the world, I don't know of any other state or country that has a military exception for the marriage age. And we at Unchained have seen girls who are forced to marry service members. So I urge you also to eliminate the military exception to the marriage age. Please amend HB 62, make it 18, no exception, and end child marriage in Alaska. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Reese.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Reinbold.
I just have had a hard time catching the names and organizations. These ladies had provided excellent testimony, and I would just like to get their potentially their contact information and their names and their organizations because they're doing extremely important work, and I'd like to follow up with them.
Yeah, we can share the list with of the names and the organizations, but we normally don't get contact information from folks. But Ms. Reese, if you wanted to reach out and contact Senator Reinbold to provide that contact information, that would be up to the individual testifiers.
I'm happy to do that. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Our next testifier is coming from Wasilla, and it's Sian Mulhern.
Yeah.
If you could state your name for the record and plan 2 minutes for your testimony.
Yes, my name is Reverend Kian Mulhern. I am the senior pastor for Celtic Ministry. We perform weddings for about 150 couples a year that have come up here to Alaska. Only about 10% of those are locals, but we have them from all over Europe and everywhere else. And like Joe said earlier, there's most of them are not bringing family members or anything like that. I wanted to be a little bit more specific on the witness part of it like that. So I heard that there was a lot of testimony and you all are talking about, you know, having a verifier that was, you know, sometimes after the wedding even, you know, verify that these people had gotten married. And I don't understand how a person can verify that these people got married if they weren't at the marriage. I do not agree with the two witnesses having to be there because that, like say in many other states, it's only the officiant, the couple. But as the couple is starting to do their marriage license application with vital records or the court, their signatures are at that time being notarized or looked at by the vital records office as they put the application in. And this right there is a verifier that the two of them both know what they are entering into. At that time, 3 days later, 6 or 90 days later. So I'm not real sure what a testifier is going to do in this process. Like I said, the testifier doesn't know them, nor do we have any kind of verification of who it is and where they really are. Many a times I've had couples find people in the park that we're at and just ask two people in the parking lot if they would come by, they'd watch the wedding, and they sign off on the paperwork, never to be seen again. So I'm in full support of HB 62, including the amendment for child marriage. I agree that the age should be 18, but that's a little bit out of my realm. I can answer any questions for you.
No, thank you, Pastor, for your testimony. We'll next go on to our next testifier, Alex Goyette. Alex, if you can state your name and any affiliation for the record and plan 2 minutes for your testimony.
Yes, thank you, the Chair, Vice Chair, and the Committee. My name is Alex Goyette, and I'm the Senior Public Policy Associate at the Tahereh Justice Center. We are a national legal services organization that works with survivors of domestic violence, sexual assault, human trafficking, and other forms of gender-based violence, including forced marriage. Tahereh's forced marriage initiative has served hundreds of people facing forced marriage across the United States, including in Alaska, and unfortunately including many children. Children under age 18 are especially vulnerable to forced marriage, and they have limited options to escape a violent home or protect themselves because they lack the legal rights of an adult. Forced marriages in particular can involve insidious forms of coercion, not only physical violence, but also extreme psychological abuse and threats. When that coercion comes from a parent, as it often does in our experience, marriage can truly feel like the only option for a teen girl who's still very dependent on her family. We appreciate the amendment that would raise Alaska's minimum marriage age from 14 to 16, but we would ask this committee to do more to protect Alaska's children and end child marriage by setting the marriage age at the age of adulthood, 18. The majority of children who marry in Alaska are 16 and 17, but unfortunately those few years don't make a difference in their legal or practical rights. The state still considers them a child, and they have the limited legal rights of a child. This makes it far more difficult and dangerous for them to resist an unwanted marriage or to leave an abusive spouse. Based on our casework and research, I want to flag just a few of the reasons that Alaska's current law poses such serious child protection concerns. First, the parental consent exception can actually conceal parental coercion, as you've heard from many of the other witnesses here today. And second, because Alaska's age floor of 14 is the lowest set by any state statute, and it falls below the state's legal age of consent for sex. Combined with the state's spousal defense statutory rape, current law essentially roadmaps a workaround for predators. Current law makes it far too easy for a whole host of horrors to lurk behind the marriage of a minor. The legislation as currently amended is a step in the right direction, but I'd ask you to do more. Please protect Alaska's children and end child marriage entirely with a minimum marriage age of 18. I thank you for your careful consideration of the issue, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Goyette, for your testimony. Next, we have Genevieve Meyer. Genevieve, if you can state your name and affiliation for the record, and you may begin when you're ready.
Hi, my name is Genevieve Meyer, and I am a survivor of child marriage, and I have also founded an organization called Resiliency Foundation that works to end child marriage and support survivors that are doing the work of testifying and trying to close this dangerous loophole. Members of the Health and Human Services Committee, thank you for taking time to hear my testimony today. This week, my husband and I will celebrate our 15th wedding anniversary. As I reflect on the last 15 years, I'm full of joy at the life that we have shared and look forward to the next 15 years. We've built a life in a small rural Midwest town and are raising four wonderful children and are part of a close community. We've been abundantly blessed and I'm grateful every day. But this isn't my first marriage. I went through hell to get to where I am today, and I'd like to share some of my story with you. At the age of 15, a 43-year-old alcoholic, unemployed, twice-divorced father of two began preying on me. My mother called the police and pressed charges, but he bailed out quickly and got to work to convince my mentally ill mother to let him marry me. Before this man even made it to his court appearance over charges of lewd acts against me, he convinced my mother that I was the aggressor at the age of 14, that I was troubled and only he could save me. He was determined to not only escape any legal consequences for his actions, but also to obtain a child bride that he could control and violate without further consequences. I was then drugged to four different states over the course of several weeks. We were finally married, just the two of us, in a county courthouse. We arrived home to an eviction notice on the door of his trailer. The charges were dropped against him and the crime disappeared. I began my sentence, which lasted for several years until I could finally escape. My education stopped at eighth grade. I had no control over my body. I could not access a doctor or any kind of family planning. I worked as much as I physically could in under-the-radar jobs because I couldn't apply for a work permit and I wasn't old enough to actually legally be employed by anybody. And I still went hungry. I couldn't purchase things like shampoo and toothpaste on a regular basis. By our second anniversary, I began contemplating if I had the will to keep fighting to survive or to end my life. Being a minor, I couldn't file for divorce or live on my own, and death began to look like my only way out of the situation. I couldn't drive. I was completely isolated. He would encourage me to drink alcohol and use drugs to chill out, but I knew if I began using drugs, I would never make it out, and so I would refuse over and over again, and it was often met with violence. It took me decades to recover mentally, emotionally, and physically from this traumatic experience. I've had to learn how to be in a normal, healthy relationship again, to trust again, and to not be terrified all the time. If I had been married at the age of 16 or 17, the circumstances and the consequences would have been exactly the same. This is the reality of child marriage today. It's used to cover up abuse. It's used to traffic children and girls. It is evil in general. The data grossly underrepresents child brides quietly suffering across our nation. We are isolated, but we are not invisible. We are hiding in plain sight all around you. My first marriage was not a marriage. Child marriage and these sick excuses for abuse and violations make a mockery of the beauty that is marriage. Please help us close this legal loophole so that not one single girl has to live through the nightmare that I did. I'm asking today on behalf of myself, my fellow survivors who cannot speak up, and even the older church ladies who tell me that even though they married young, it's not the same today as it was for them back then. So I'm asking you to please honor the amendment and raise the minimum age to marry in Alaska to 18 years of age, no exception. Because none of us are safe until all of us are safe. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Meyer. Yes, Senator Casella.
Thank you. And I think I speak on behalf of all the committee, Genevieve. I really appreciate you having the courage to testify in our committee and taking time out of your day, calling in from where you are to share your story with us. Thank you.
Yes. And also, just let folks know that may be listening in, we don't have an amendment yet before the committee, but I think one might be forthcoming from a committee member. So just wanted to let folks, just to clarify that. This time, is there any further questions for the bill sponsor who's gone, but his staff, Ms. Kukarik, is still here? I'm just going to ask if the bill sponsor could possibly provide the committee comment upon the proposed ideation of an amendment to raise a marriage to age 18. Yeah, you don't have to comment upon that, just if the bill sponsor can get back to the committee on that topic. And at this time, unless you have any other closing comments, okay. At this time, we'll set this bill aside and bring it back later date. Amendments for this piece of legislation is going to be due on Monday, April 11th at 5 p.m. to our office. Our next meeting will hold. It will be to hear Ms. Ings Morn, an appointee to the Alaska Mental Health Board, Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority Board, and we will continue the amendment process of SB 124, Mental Health Facilities Meds. That concludes our meeting today. Is there any closing comments? Seeing none, we are adjourned at 2:32.